Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Transforming Confusion into Wisdom, The Five Buddha Families, Part 2, by Lama Cathy Wesley. We can sometimes feel intimidated by the path to awakening. Our clouds of confusion can feel so thick and wisdom so far away. But the methods of Dharma can help us make the path more possible. By reviewing the teachings on the five wisdoms, Lama Cathy will show how we can purify our negativities and uncover our inner Buddha qualities. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you so much for being with us today, and thanks to everybody, all the volunteers for helping make this place beautiful day after day for us to sit and meditate in. And I'd like to welcome all of you who are here and also all of you who are watching on Facebook and YouTube and elsewhere. Thank you again for joining us for our Dharma Talk this morning. Last week, we started a two-part series on the five Buddha families. And so I'm going to finish that up today. And I wanted to start with a prayer, which is what we usually do here, a prayer of intention, setting our intention. When we come into this room, we come in with this sincere intention of wanting to be better people. I kind of think that's a safe bet, you know. You don't come into a meditation hall and think, you know, I wish I could be more of an idiot than I was yesterday. I think we all would rather be better people, be better and do more to be of help to ourselves and to those we care about. And so it's common in Buddhist circles to start with a prayer of intention for that reason. So the refuge prayer is where we start. We take refuge in the Buddha as our teacher, his Dharma teaching as our path, and his Sangha as our community. And what we'll do here is we'll recite it two times in English, and then I'll recite it in Tibetan with a Tibetan melody as the third recitation. So, okay. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Now in Tibetan. Or Sanje Chudan Sochi Chonahamla Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Bei Sunaham Ki Drola Pinchu Sanje Drupasho. Okay, thanks everyone. And now I'll say a short prayer of my own. And then we'll get started. Thanks very much. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Or Simjin Tamji Dewa Tan, the way you tan them, park your chi, don't out on the Maggie Jitan Drawa Jurchi, don't you maybe Dewa Dampa Tam and Drawa Jurchi, Nerin Chand and Tandra Way Tanyincha Pula Nepa Jurichi. Or Paldin Sawela Marimboche, Tagi Chi or Pede Tinchala, Kadrin Jambo Gonece Sunte. Kusum tugging a drip salt soul. Okay. Thanks very much. I'll start with a brief review of where we started last week. We all, as I mentioned earlier, we all want to be better and do more to be of help to ourselves and others. And sometimes it seems like that goal is out of reach. But we do have a lot of potential, and we do have a lot of interior gifts that can help us become the best version of ourselves. And the ideal path toward that also lets us take others on the path with us. So it's not something we're striking out on and doing by ourselves. We're doing it in community. We're doing it with others. And so we hopefully can not only help ourselves and benefit ourselves, but benefit others as well. The Buddha taught thousands and thousands of Dharma teachings to counteract and transform the thousands and thousands of mental afflictions that human beings experience. And we can use these teachings to transform ourselves. And those of you who are familiar with the life story of the Buddha, even as he was dying, his followers said, "Oh, teacher, please don't die. We need you in order to accomplish Buddhahood." And he said, "I've already given you everything you need. All of these teachings, I've given you everything you need. Now you can work toward your own liberation with diligence." So what he's telling us is that all of us, no matter who we are, we all have the potential to be a Buddha. We can all be a Buddha ourselves someday if we can follow the path. And the path that's taught by the Buddha is fairly simple. He said, if you want to practice my Dharma, you don't have to practice a lot of things. You only have to practice one thing. And what is that one thing? It's love and compassion. He says, whoever has love and compassion has all the qualities of the Buddha right there in the palm of their hand. You couldn't get any closer. And so if we can use these practices and teachings, we can transform ourselves with this love and compassion. If those of you who remember the four statements made by the Buddha when he was asked about his path, do no harm whatsoever, practice virtue as much as possible, and tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha, meaning there's no other. Don't look elsewhere. This is it. This is it. Do no harm means to not harm yourself and not harm others. Do as much virtue as possible means to take care of yourself and to benefit others. And taming the mind means to meditate and practice self-awareness so that you can tell the difference between harm and benefit. Because if we don't watch our minds, how are we going to know what the difference is? And so the Dharma teachings tell us that this is how we can act and create an environment around ourselves of goodness and virtue. Further, the Buddha talked about what the mind itself was. And when the Buddha taught about what the mind is or was, what is itself, he says the mind is vast and deep like an ocean. Vast and deep. And all of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions are like waves on top of that ocean. Now, I think that most of us spend most of our lives surfing on all those thoughts and feelings and emotions, right? We spend all our time surfing. And we never really go below the surface and see what the mind is and feel what the mind is. And so what the Buddha is encouraging us to do is find a way to practice so that we can see that depth and feel that depth in our mind. And so, but what's the reason if we already have this vast and deep mind? How is it that we've never seen its nature? How is it that we've never seen our Buddha nature? How come? Why? You know, why have we never seen it? If we have it, why have we never seen it? And the teachings of the Buddha tell us that the reason we don't see it is because we have a lot of obstacles and obscurations, you know? And those obstacles and obscurations consist of everything that is sort of selfish about us, all of our self-will, all of the things that we do. That's whenever we harm somebody, it's usually because we're trying to impose our self-will on somebody else, right? And so what we're trying to do in Dharma is hold back from doing that and to think about what the kind and loving response is instead. And the reason we haven't seen our Buddha nature is because we have a lot of confusion about who we are and what our mind is. And in fact, we have something that I like to call our karmic presets. It's like the presets on a radio, you know, you just hit that button and then that station comes up, right? So we all have lived billions and billions of times in the past, and through all those lifetimes, we did a lot of stuff. And all of the things that we were and did in the past form who we are today. And sometimes if we find, for example, one of my problems is that I'm a little bit impatient. Some people say it's more than a little bit, but I tend to be impatient. And that undoubtedly comes from previous lifetimes of being impatient and never fixing it. You know, they always say if you don't fix something, it just keeps coming back. So these karmic habits from previous lifetimes keep us busy in the story of our life. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Right? I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And then we look at everybody as being either friends in that thing we're going to do or enemies in that thing we're going to do. And then we just plug everybody else into our story. But if we were seeing it as a liberated being sees it, we would be taking a step backward and seeing that there's more going on here. And that there is more to mind than just our story. And that's the function of meditation. Any person who has even tried to practice meditation knows what happens. You're sitting in meditation, and let's say you're using the breath as the object of your meditation. So you're sitting there observing the breath with your mind's eye, right? The breath is coming in, the breath is coming out, and you're doing real well for about 10 seconds, and breath's coming in, breath's coming out, you're very attentive for 10 seconds, breath coming in, and then suddenly, oh, I gotta do this thing tomorrow. And then you're off to the races and you're thinking about tomorrow. Or you think about something that happened yesterday, and it's like you're over there in the past. And so what the teachings about meditation tell us to do when this happens is they tell us to notice that we have wandered from our object of meditation and to gently bring ourselves back to the object for a fresh start. So I'd be watching the breath, and then suddenly I'm in the past, and then I'd say, oh, thinking, I'd label it, let it go, and then bring my attention back to the breath and think of it as a fresh start. And by doing this over and over and over again, I begin to notice something, and that is that when I let go of that thought of the past or the future, where does it go? It kind of disappears. It just like, it's gone, because I'm not feeding it anymore. It's just disappears. And that, it disappears like an ocean wave comes up and it crests, and then it falls back into the ocean from which it came. And so when we do that enough and enough and enough, we find that we can actually create new waves on the ocean of samsara. You know, we can create new waves of love, compassion, and goodness. And that is the power of meditation. So This is kind of where we started last week. We started talking about the capacity of the mind and how amazing the mind is. And we talked about the concept of the five afflictive emotions being part of our karmic presets. You know, if you want to know which of your karmic presets are predominating, look at the emotion you struggle with the most. If you want to know where you got to aim your Dharma practice, you can look at your karmic presets and you can figure out which emotion bothers you the most by the amount of time it takes up in your mind. So the Buddha identified 84,000 mental afflictions, but if that's a little too many to talk about today, so we're going to brief it down to the five mental afflictions: pride and arrogance, jealousy, attachment, aversion, and greediness. I'm sorry, yeah, bewilderment. Did I get there? Let's try it again. Pride, jealousy, oh yeah, attachment, aversion, ignorance. Okay, got it now. When you talk about six, greed comes in there. So, yeah, sometimes they describe five, sometimes they describe six. Part of the reason they did that was because they didn't have a lot of books. You couldn't just go look something up in a book. You had to, like, memorize it. So if you knew you had four things to remember, you'd know whether you had it or not. Anyway. So when we talk about these five predominating karmic presets, we know which of these emotions is our biggest challenge. But what the teachings also say is that if we can let go of that mental affliction, if we can let it go and have it disappear like that, what's left is an open space that is imbued with wisdom. And that wisdom is called one of the five Buddha wisdoms. And so we started talking about this last week as a way of giving us encouragement for working with our karmic presets. Because sometimes if you have a predominating mental affliction, sometimes people think, I'm never going to get the better of this. But you can, and that's what the teachings are all about noticing and working with and engaging. And it's also very encouraging to know that when you purify the mental affliction of pride, for example, what's left behind is a form of wisdom called mirror-like wisdom. And when you purify jealousy, that there's a kind of wisdom that's left after that, the all-accomplishing wisdom. So the guide that I was using to talk about these five Buddha wisdoms is this book, A Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Now, this was one of the first books I read about Buddhism back in the 1970s, and it was a real eye-opener then, and it's still a real eye-opener today. Each of the mental afflictions is described in this section of the book, and it's related to its wisdom. And the reason that Trungpa said he was talking about this was so that we could understand ourselves better and also understand other people better. It's not that he's asking us to pigeonhole people and say, oh, you're a this or you're a that. I mean, we already have a lot of other ways to do that. But what he's asking us to do is not pigeonhole people, but understand them. Not to pigeonhole them, but to understand them and feel compassion for them. So that way, we don't just look at prideful people and say, idiot. No. We'd say, that person's suffering. That person's suffering from pride. And so so last week we started talking about the Buddha families, and we described the first two. The Vajra family, which is associated with anger, and the Ratna family, which is associated with pride and with earth. So I'll refer you back to last week's, the recording of last week's talk, which I apologize, folks. I have not put it up on YouTube yet. I apologize for that. I was supposed to do that earlier this week and I forgot. So now that I'm sitting here with you, I'm remembering something I didn't do. And I will do my best to take care of that this week. But now we're going to talk about the remaining three Buddha wisdoms, as well as the Buddha family they represent. Each of these families has a name. The Vajra family, the word Vajra means indestructible, but it can also refer to a diamond, which is the hardest substance on earth. And the word Ratna means jewel, like a gemstone or a jewel. And the next one is called Padma. And I'm just going to read to you from Trungpa's book because it's just, you know, it's very clear. It's connected with passion, a grasping quality, and a desire to possess. In the background of passion is the, which I guess you could call attachment also, attachment. In the background of this attachment, there's the instinct toward wanting to become one with something. But passion also has a quality of neurosis that ignores the real state of being united and instead wants to possess something in order to become united. For example, if we want to have possession, whether it's something special, a special book or a special something, a piece of furniture or something, we might desire or want that thing. And we also might desire or want people, right? We also might want to have, I want that person in my life, or I want that person in my life. And if I could have that person in my life or that thing in my life, then I would be complete. And he's saying, maybe that's not going to work. He said, it's coming from a good place of knowing the oneness of all things, but thinking that you have to get to oneness through possession of something else. And that's the neurosis quality of attachment, of wanting to possess something for your own benefit. And then Trungpa says, this kind of attachment defeats its own purpose automatically. But he said, on the other side of it is the discriminating awareness wisdom. So this negative desire to possess, if it is purified, what remains is the wisdom of discriminating awareness, which nonetheless knows the nature of every single thing, sees the detail in every single thing, but doesn't desire to possess it. You know everything, but you know you already have it. You know you're already one with it. So here's what he says. In the case of the wisdom of discriminating awareness, which is the wisdom aspect of passion, one sees the qualities of this and that precisely. In other words, communication takes place. Instead of possession, there's communication. If you are going to communicate with someone, you must respect the existence of the other person as well as the presence, the process of communication. Discriminating awareness wisdom recognizes the fact of unity, which is quite different from the dualistic separating of that and this in order to maintain one's sort of egoistic story. The consuming quality of burning fire is transmitted into the wisdom of binding together through communication. You may be completely caught up with possessiveness in a spiritual or a material sense. You may want something more than what you have. You may be so fascinated by the exotic qualities of the thing you want that you are blind to the world around you. You are completely wrapped up in attachment, which produces an automatic sort of stupidity or ignorance. And this ignorance is transcended in the wisdom of discriminating awareness. Padma family is linked with the West and the color red. Red stands out from any other color, is very inviting. It draws you toward it. It's also connected with the element of fire. In the confused state, fire does not discriminate among the things that it grasps, burns, and destroys. In the awake state, the heat of attachment is transmuted into the warmth of compassion. It is related. Padma is related to early spring. The harshness of winter is just about to soften with the promise of summer. Then he says, a Padma is a reasonable location, a place where wild flowers grow, a perfect place for animals to roam about. It is a place of meadows scattered with gentle rocks suitable for young animals to play among. So again, he's talking about our negative mental afflictions. If we can recognize their presence and let them go, that's the start of the birth of the wisdom that's beneath them. If we can recognize them and let them go, and that's, we have to see the problems of pursuing our mental afflictions. A lot of us think that mental afflictions are our friend. Like, we need anger in order to solve a problem. Maybe that's what we might think that. Or we might think we need to possess that thing in order to be happy, but it's all just a mistake. And so we have to kind of get real about our mental afflictions and see them for what they are and begin to work on purifying them into real connection, which is love and compassion. And there are two more Buddha families to describe. So I've got a few minutes, and so I'm going to work through the last two of the Buddha wisdoms. The karma family is associated with the emotion of jealousy, envy, and the element of the wind. However, the terms jealousy and envy are not powerful and precise enough to describe the quality of the karma delusion. Absolute paranoia is probably a good phrase. You feel that you are not going to achieve any of your goals. You become irritated by the accomplishments of other people. You feel left behind. Does any of this sound familiar? You feel left behind and cannot bear to see others surpass you. This fear, this distrust of oneself is connected with the element of wind. The wind never blows in all directions, but it blows in one direction at a time. This is the one-way view of paranoia. Karma, the energy of the karma family, is connected with the wisdom of all accomplishing action. The quality of paranoia falls away, but the quality of energy, keenness to action, and openness remain. In other words, the active aspect of the wind is retained so that one's activity touches everything in its path. One becomes accomplished. Instead of envying the accomplishments of others, one perfectly accomplishes things oneself without attachment and neurosis. So it says one's action becomes appropriate because it doesn't involve self-conscious panic or paranoia anymore. It sees the possibilities inherent in situations, not wanting to impose one's will upon it. And then we automatically take the appropriate course of action. Our action then fulfills its purpose. Karma suggests a summer in the north. It is the efficiency of karma which connects it with this season. For it is a summer in which all things are active, growing, fulfilling their functions. Millions of interconnected actions take place. Living things grow, plants, insects, animals. There are thunderstorms and even hailstorms. There is the sense that you are never left to enjoy the summer because there's always something moving in order to maintain itself. The color of karma is the green of vegetables and grasses, growing energy. Whereas the karma of summer is competing, trying to give birth, the ratna of autumn has tremendous confidence. Everything has been accomplished. The mood of karma is after sunset, dusk, late day, and early night. So what's really great about these descriptions that he gives is that it connects us to the natural world, which is something we already know. It's not that we're talking about something that's sort of theoretical or pie in the sky. We're talking about the energy of life. We're talking about the energy of the world we live in and that we inhabit. And we can either experience our world in a confused way through these mental afflictions, or we can experience them with natural awakening and natural relaxation, when we're not kind of clamping down through egotism on anything. We've got one more Buddha family. And interestingly enough, it's called Buddha. By the way, the word karma means action or activity. And Padma literally means lotus flower. So anyway, the Buddha family is associated with dullness and has an all-pervading quality because it contains and goes with all the rest of the emotions. So it kind of pervades and is in the background of all the other emotions. The active factor in this dullness is the action of ignoring. Ignoring does not want to see. It just ignores and overcrowds itself. You know, I talk about it as being like, it's like chosen ignorance, where you kind of know what reality is, but you choose not to pay attention. We've all been there, you know, like, I'm not seeing that danger in the corner. I'm just not going to look at that anymore. It's not really there. So he says, in this state of mind of ignorance, he said, you're completely relaxed and completely careless. You would rather maintain your stupor than search or struggle for anything. And a slothful, stupid quality is brought to all of your other emotions. Oh, that's harsh. But you see, what it is that all emotions, I have bad news for you. All emotions are painful. This is one of the four marks of samsara, is that all emotions are, even the ones we like, they actually are inherently painful because not only, like happiness, I know it's really weird. It's like reading 1984 where they say happiness is suffering. Anyway, but here's the deal. There is suffering in the middle of happiness because we cling to it. That's the only reason that happiness is a cause of suffering, is because we cling to it so much and we don't want it to stop. And if we could let go, like William Blake in that poem, if you can kiss the joy when it flies, you live in eternity sunrise. That's what Blake said. And so the idea, if we hold on to anything, it's going to become a cause of suffering. But if we can let it go, then it's a little bit easier. Anyhow, sorry, back to the Buddha family. The wisdom connected with the Buddha family is that of all-encompassing space. The all-pervading quality of dullness is kept as the foundation, but the flicker of doubt and sloth, what a great word, although sloths are great creatures. What can I say? In this dullness is transformed into wisdom. This wisdom contains tremendous energy and intelligence, which runs through all of the other elements, colors, and emotions, which activate all the rest of the five wisdoms. The Buddha family is the foundation or the basic ground. It is the environment or oxygen, which makes it possible for the other principles to function. It has a solid, sedate quality. Ratna is very solid and earthy as well, but it's not as earthy as the Buddha family, which is dull earthy, uninteresting earthy. Buddha is somewhat desolate, almost too spacious. It's a campsite where only the stones from the campfire is left. The place has a sense of having been inhabited, but at the present, no one is here. The mood is like that of caves where Native Americans used to live. These caves have a feeling of the past, but at the same time, there are no outstanding characteristics. Buddha is connected with the plains, and the color blue, and the cool, spacious quality of the sky. So, learning about these five Buddha families and the five Buddha wisdoms have a couple of benefits for us. Learning about the predominating mental afflictions help us to recognize these predominating mental afflictions in ourself, but knowing that these mental afflictions are connected to a Buddha wisdom that's inside us hopefully will help us to not judge ourselves too harshly when we notice that we're experiencing a negative affliction. Hopefully, when we see ourselves becoming prideful, we'll say, well, there I go, being ratna, you know, and then I gotta back up from that, and I'm gonna try to have this all-encompassing wisdom. So the idea is that by looking and studying about these things, we will find ways to be compassionate toward ourselves and to see the potential, even in our worst faults, for liberation. And also, it helps us to appreciate others, even the ones whose behavior bothers us, because we know that they've got qualities underneath that confusion, and we can make the aspiration and hope that they accomplish those. It also helps to explain the practices of Tibetan Buddhism. Remember I said last week there were a couple of reasons I wanted to teach this. One of them was I wanted to explain this room. Yeah. And the other little secret was that I wanted to explain who we all are inside. We are all Buddhas inside. And gradually through time, we will come to know which of the Buddha families is the Buddha family we want to practice, because all of the bodhisattvas that are practiced as mantra practices in Tibetan Buddhism are part of one of these five Buddha families. And so Kempo Kartha Rinpoche has suggested that it's good for us to practice the Bodhisattva Chenrezi, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, whose mantra is Om Mani Padme Hum, as our general first mantra practice, because it contains all five of the Buddha wisdoms in the mantra. Each of the syllables of the mantra is associated with one of the Buddha families. And you may say, now wait a minute, there are six syllables. Yes, and there are only five Buddha families. The fifth one, there is what you would call a ruling Buddha family. And that is represented by the final syllable. But the practice is a way of practicing all of the Buddha families and to purify all of our mental afflictions. Kempo Rinpoche said, for example, the syllable Om purifies pride. The syllable Ma purifies jealousy. The syllable Ama, Ni, purifies attachment. Pe, purifies ignorance. May purifies that greed, that sixth one, right? And then Hung purifies hatred. So by reciting this mantra, you can think as you are reciting the mantra that you're purifying your mental afflictions and turning them into wisdom. And it's only symbolic for us at first. You know, the five Buddha families and so forth, it's all symbolic. But what we attempt to accomplish is actually a powerful thing. It's beyond symbolism. It has to do with transcendence of confusion. And so that's what all of these practices are about, transcending confusion. And we will gradually, over time, learn more mantra practices in our, and I guess if you want to call it our Buddhist career. We start with Chenrezig practice, or perhaps the practice of Tara, or perhaps the practice of Medicine Buddha. These are the practices that we do here at Columbus KTC. They're very easy to learn, and they're very powerful methods of transformation. And we will be doing those practices in this room, which also symbolizes the five Buddha families. Right now, the main color is a Ratna color. It's yellow. And against this backdrop, there will be paintings and wall decorations and banners hanging from the beams. It's going to look a little bit like a palace when we're all done. And the palace is the palace of our own mind, in a way. It's symbolic of all the qualities of Buddhahood. And so, so it's really cool to know that through symbolism, we can get the idea of the truth. And then through meditation, we can accomplish the reality of the truth. And so I think I better stop here and see if there are any, let's see, how much time do I have? Ooh, I have 15 minutes for questions. So if anybody has questions, they can feel welcome to come and ask at the microphone.
Yeah. Thank you, Lama Kathy.
Yeah, thank you.
Your book reminds me of a difficulty I have with a family that is leader, guru for another tradition, Shambhala. And as I understand it, the grandfather came to Great Britain, the son came to America, the grandson went to Colorado. They have been found to be alcoholic and sexually abusive. So they have written books, and they have written well, I guess, wisdom in writing, but their history has really spoiled those books for me. So
yeah.
Can you cure me, please?
Oh, yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know, I think it is difficult, isn't it? Because even teachers are human. I know it's really hard to accept that. I was talking with someone about this just yesterday. And the person who's not Buddhist was saying, well, you know, every person has some goodness in them. And can you make use of that goodness without accepting the behavior? And that's I think that's the question we all have to ask ourselves. Is the wisdom that a person gives negated by their actions? And I don't know the answer to that. So I can't cure you, but what I can say is that my friends in 12-step like to say, take what you need and leave the rest. And so that's what I'm choosing to do with these books, is take what's useful. But there are other ways to learn about these principles. So if this book has kind of been, and I understand that, and I feel for that. I feel that by reading the book, I'm not saying to someone that what they did was right and how they lived their life was correct. I mean, we look at all the great writers and thinkers of our time, and they all have some mitigating negative factor. I mean, even the great saints had many negative factors. So it's really hard to, we have to decide what we're going to take in and how that impacts us. So if you can't take it in because of the impact, then that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are two other authors you could study the books of. Trungpa Rinpoche is a monastic, and Kempo Kartha Rinpoche is a monastic, who have led exemplary lives. And so Trangu is spelled T-H-R-A-N-G-U. And so you can study his book on the five Buddha families. And Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, K-A-R-T-H-A-R, Rinpoche wrote a book on the five Buddha families. And hopefully these books will keep you inspired while at the same time give you some compassion, you know, toward the people who you can't hear right now because of all the interference, you know, because it's interference. We can't hear them because of what we know about them. You know what I mean? It's like, right? So so I think it's fine. I think it's fine to decide what kind of teachings you want to get. And so what I've ended up doing was taking what is good from the situation and then letting go of the other parts. But that's the best I can do. But I will consider what you said, and think about what using these books means. So I'll think about that. So thank you for giving me something to think about.
Thank you very much. You certainly don't have to get rid of the books. Your words help me to remember that we all, including myself, have goodness, but it sure is obscurated. Thank you.
I get it. Yeah, me too. That's why I can't give a good answer. Hello. Yeah, thank you for the question. Anyway, it's all good. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could talk about, of the five major chakras, I'm wondering if these are associated with the chakras.
Oh, the Buddha families?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. I didn't study Hindu yoga, so I'm a little bit unfamiliar with how Hindu yoga and Buddhism are related. But the energy systems in the body, you know, there is a place you can read about it from the Buddhist point of view, because I think most people who talk about chakras and energies in the body, they are doing so out of a wish to improve themselves through yoga, and there is Tibetan Buddhist yoga, but it's only practiced in the three-year retreat. And so what we've learned in the three-year retreat about the energy, the interior energy systems of the body, we don't share with other people because it needs to be practiced in under strict supervision. And in fact, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche in his book, Dharma Paths, gives a warning against working with chakra energy. Because he said, what happens is that frequently the people who teach about chakra energy don't honestly know what they're talking about and don't know the practices inside and out. And so if they teach it to you and you attempt to move energy through the channels, energy channels in your body, that negative outcomes could arise. And he says it also kind of ruins your connection to your subtle body and subtle energies, so that even when you receive the genuine teachings on them from a master, you can't really apply them the way you want to. Because, in fact, he says, he actually uses these words in the book Dharma Paths. He said, because you will have sort of played with it. You know, so in any case, what I'll do is I'll get together with you after, because I have to return your book. And I'll give you the title of a book that Kempo Rinpoche recommended. Okay, yeah, okay, very good. So I'm sorry I couldn't answer that question. I can just talk around it. I could talk around it, but I can't answer it directly. Yeah.
I guess, if I'm understanding.
Thank you, sound booth. Yeah, okay. check.
Each of these five afflictions sort of contains ultimately the opposite. The wisdom is the opposite of it.
You could say the wisdom is the opposite. Yeah, in a way you could say the wisdom is the opposite. It's kind of like how do I want to put this? Sort of the confused aspect. There's like a wisdom aspect and a confused aspect, right? And so, for example, the karma family is associated with like this paranoia and, you know, jealousy and stuff. And yet the name of the wisdom is the all-accomplishing wisdom. So it's like we're accomplishing things in the wrong way when we're, you know, when we're competitive and jealous. And we're seeing that everything is fine and accomplished in a different way through the wisdom. So I guess you could say they almost do seem like opposites, but they're somehow related, you know? And it's kind of like the Padma wisdom. That's another one that fascinates me, because it's the confused aspect is like wanting to possess something, the grasping and the wanting to possess something. And yet, the overcoming of that is discriminating awareness wisdom, which actually knows that everything is already connected and that you don't need to get something. I mean, it's isn't it interesting? It's kind of like the wisdom that knows that the confusion aspect is unnecessary. You know, I don't know more than that, but yeah, it would seem, I don't know whether the word opposite of the other is it, or if it's just a different way of experiencing the same thing. Or, you know, it's duality, but maybe it's a new and improved duality, or a bigger and better duality, because it's transcendent. I don't know. But I should stop talking now. Oh, the questioner is saying that it maybe it's a difference of it being murky rather than being clear. It's a good way of thinking. Okay. Do I have time for one more? Yeah, I've got time for one more if there's one more out there. Okay, well then we'll wrap up for today then. I really appreciate having had the opportunity to talk to you about the five Buddha wisdoms. And this is kind of the best I can do, because I, you know, not being an enlightened being is sometimes a little dicey, you know, to sit in this chair. You know, I do my best. But I do recommend these books on the five Buddha families by Trungpa Rinpoche and Kempo Carter Rinpoche. And you can get them from the Namse Bangso bookstore, which is basically just type in Karma Triana Dharma Chakra or KTD bookstore, and I think it'll come up. I think it'll come up, and then you can buy them from there, and it'll benefit our monastery. So gathering together all the merit that we've accumulated by talking about these today, we'll dedicate it to our relief from the five mental afflictions and the uncovering of our five Buddha wisdoms. So we'll recite it once in English, and then I'll recite it again in Tibetan. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the Bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. O sonam dehi tamche zipani, tom ne ne pedranam pamche ne, Ke gana chi balav trupai si pe so le tro war tro harsho
Jampalpa Ujitarken Padang Kuntu Sampo Deyan Deshinte Deita Kwengi Jesu Da Loching Kewadita Tamche Raptu. Okay, thanks everyone. Thank you. And thank you to the sound and audio part department. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.